The Reformation's relevancy, natural law, news discernment, modern-day apostles and prophets, depression, catechizing our children. You can meet and hear Issues Etc. regular guests discussing these topics at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 9th and 10th in Collinsville, Illinois. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Registration is $120. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 9th and 10th in Collinsville, Illinois.
They go everywhere with us. We have them in the car. We have them in the house, the grocery store. They are considered to be, nowadays, probably by most people who use them, they're considered to be an absolute necessity. How did I ever get along without this thing, a smartphone? It's our access to the internet. It's our way of connecting with one another over social media. It's our way of, well, occasionally even making a phone call. But where do they belong? I mean, people will decry the fact that you could go to a restaurant and see people sitting around a table and not interacting with anyone except the people at the other end of their smartphone, and they're supposed to be eating dinner together. It happens at home, too, and around the television, all those places where we're supposed to have real social contact. What about church? There are some churches that are encouraging people in the use of their smartphone in church. Is it a good idea? What kind of lines have we already crossed? There's a BBC story about smartphones, social media, and Christianity. Joining us to talk about it on this Monday afternoon, February the 27th, Pastor Hans Feeney. He's pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois, and creator of a series of comical videos called Lutheran Satire. He's also senior contributor to The Federalist. Hans, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me.
When I first entered the ministry, it was 26 years ago, I believe, someone who would have brought a camera into church during a baptism, back in the day before cell phones, obviously, someone who brought a camera in probably would have been told to wait until after the service to take any pictures. Yesterday, we had a baptism in church, and I noticed, but really didn't take note of the fact that there were several people holding up their smartphones, filming the entire proceeding. Should I be concerned?
I think there's a little bit of cause for concern. Yeah, I think it's certainly good in the church to maintain a sense of sacred space. And while it's good for folks to want to have some kind of record of this wonderful event of a child being added to the family of God through the waters of baptism, I do think there's kind of a larger, somewhat troubling trend for people where they are kind of incapable of seeing something without having to be seen seeing it at the same time, if that makes any sense, which I think is kind of a lot of times the nature of social media.
So explain that with kind of, I want to be seen seeing what we're all seeing.
Yeah, well, I think in a way, with kind of the advent of social media, so you post something on Facebook and get a number of likes, or you get, you know, retweets and stuff like this on Twitter, that there's a tendency in people to just kind of inadvertently turn their lives into a sort of a work of performance art where you're sort of getting ratings and reviews all throughout the process. So every time you're having a thought, you're throwing it out there. Every time you're going on a location, you know, you're going to a location and experiencing something and doing something, there's this need to make it available for the entire world to see so that other people can sort of validate the fact that you've gone through this experience. And I think a lot of times what's just so odd to me in a lot of ways about this is that, you know, you'll see events that people will oftentimes go to, I was reading an article, it had some pictures of people, presumably Roman Catholic people, who are at some event where the Pope is coming by, and they're all filming themselves as he's going by, and it seems to be that they're not actually looking at the event as it's going by in the camera that they're filming. And then you just kind of go, well, what do you do with it from there? I mean, do you just sort of, you post it online, do you live through your own memories that way, or is it more so? It seems to me that the way memories ought to work is that you establish the memory, and then you go back to it, rather than what we kind of have now, which is just sort of this weird instant nostalgia where we're immediately archiving things as they're happening, basically just to kind of see how the world responds to it. It's a bit odd.
When this finds its way into the church, start with your kind of basic concerns about that way of living our lives. Let's just call it kind of the selfie-ization of life when it finds its way into the church.
Yeah, well, kind of going back to the idea of, you know, people taking video and stuff like that during baptisms, one of the things I've noticed, this may just be unique to my congregation, but I suspect it's probably fairly common in most sets of circumstances. It's not generally the people I have who are coming to church, you know, every Sunday, who are wanting to film baptisms as they're happening, or maybe taking photographs while this is going on. It tends to be family members of the kid who's being baptized, or if it's, you know, families who perhaps aren't necessarily coming all that often before or after the baptism, which is a problem kind of in and of itself. But that tends to kind of be the case, which sort of indicates for folks that this is more of an event in the life of this family. You know, it's sort of like in the olden days when you'd have the camcorder and you're walking around filming everyone at, you know, Thanksgiving dinner, rather than that this is an event that belongs to the church and in the life of the church, and that this is the grace of Christ poured out upon this child, just as is kind of done. It's certainly done uniquely in baptism, but that grace is given in every worship service that we ever have. So I think there's something about that when you feel the overwhelming need to film things in church, there's oftentimes a connection, or the idea there is that you're kind of actually disconnected from just the regular word and sacrament ministry of the congregation, that you're finding something a bit unique about it, I suppose. But in just kind of a broader sense, yeah, I think there's a larger kind of problematic sense in that people are having a really hard time disconnecting from the screen and from whatever kind of sense of euphoria or comfort that gives to them. And they're not, people are having a hard time being comfortable in an environment where they just sit and take part in the event and are a part of it in that moment without, as I say, kind of having to turn it into production art at the same time.
So how do you respond to someone who says, look, the technology is neither here nor there. Technology is neutral, and the church just has to find a way either to adapt or to best use this stuff?
I think that's a good argument in certain ways, in certain aspects of the proclamation of the gospel and the kind of just the broader work of the church. For example, this is kind of the question that would, you know, the question, historical question of the Reformation. You know, is would the Reformation have happened if it hadn't been for the advent of the printing press? But the reality is, they weren't bringing printing presses into the divine service and kind of, you know, running off manuscripts of Luther's sermons or of anyone else's sermons in those settings. So I think it's one thing to sort of say, well, you know, what does pastoral care look like in the advent of smartphone technology, you know, where it's easier to connect to people in these ways, where sometimes people are they're less likely to communicate with you in traditional ways. It's, you know, kind of harder to get people to answer a phone nowadays. For some reason, that's kind of taken on the character of being, oh, well, that's what you do when you're serious, is you actually call someone on the phone. Kind of in the same way that, you know, in the days when pastors would just kind of go and make visits more often, it was a little bit easier to do that. But nowadays, people kind of always worry that something's wrong if the pastor is coming to visit. So I think there's a way in which you could say, well, yeah, the technology is kind of neutral in the sense it sort of depends on how you use it. You know, with regard to what does it mean to have pastoral care? What does it mean to belong to a congregation? I think, you know, one of the questions I wrestle with a lot is, when it comes to socializing with people of a common confession of faith online, you know, with various Facebook groups or things of this nature that are dedicated towards this, is you're going, well, you know, who's the pastor of this group? Where's the sort of the doctrinal oversight of this? And those, I think, are somewhat difficult questions to answer. But as far as, you know, people bringing phones into the divine service and things of this nature, I don't really think this is an issue of the church needing to adapt to the technology, because the technology isn't actually accomplishing anything new. So if you're reading the words of the scriptures, you know, in a pew Bible, if you're reading them in a bulletin, or if you're reading them on a smartphone, it's all the same concept of your brain putting together letters that are arranged in a certain way. And I think if when we can recognize that there's a clear distraction that devices of this nature offer, and that they kind of pull us away from the corporate aspect of worship, that it's something that we ought to think twice about embracing too wholeheartedly.
We're talking about a BBC story about smartphones, social media, and Christianity. Pastor Hans Feeney is our guest. He is pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois, creator of a series of comical videos called Lutheran Satire, and a senior contributor to The Federalist. He is also a 2008 graduate of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, where they form servants in Jesus Christ to teach the faithful, reach the lost, and care for all. If you've ever considered the vocation of pastor or deaconess, visit ctsfw.edu, ctsfw.edu, or call 1-800-481-2155. 800-481-2155, Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. On the other side of the break, remember when Twitter was just burgeoning as a social media platform? There were pastors across the country trying to use it during their sermons. People, just tweet me something during my sermon, I'll answer your question. We'll find out what that does to preaching after this.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
What are some of the myths of gospel reductionism? I've written part two of an article titled Better Than Good, Failed Attempts to Improve on the Gospel in the latest issues, etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Joy Pullman of The Federalist writes about her journey from charismatic experientialism to confessional Lutheranism. The free online Issues Etc. journal.
Spiritual and religious. You're listening to Issues Etc.
I'm Pastor Watson. Are you tired of entertainment and in need of the peace that passes human understanding? I invite you to Augsburg Lutheran Church in Shawnee, Kansas, to receive the gifts of Jesus. Augsburg is scriptural, traditional, historical, sacramental, and reverent. The Church of the Apostles, the Councils, and the Reformers wants to be your church family also. For more information, visit us at augsburglutheranchurch.org.
This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial has a charitable grant program called Thrivent Choice. Thrivent Choice allows you to designate charitable outreach funds to Lutheran Public Radio. For more information, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org, or ask your Thrivent representative about Thrivent Choice. Help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. with Thrivent Choice.
Do you long for a church where the gospel of the sinner's free justification is front and center, and yet where a robust sacramental life is confessed and lived? Do you long for a church that rejoices in the sacred scriptures as the sole basis for the church's teaching and proclamation, yet values and listens to the witness of the ancient fathers and councils? Welcome to the Lutheran Church. We are what you've been looking for. Find a Christ-centered, cross-focused church near you on the Find the Church page at issuesetc.org.
Would you like to learn about the Reformation theology you hear on Issues Etc.? We'll send you a pamphlet of Luther's Small Catechism for free. It contains the biblical teachings on the Ten Commandments, the Apostles' Creed, the Lord's Prayer, baptism, the Lord's Supper, and confession and absolution. Order your free copy of Luther's Small Catechism today. Just send your name and mailing address to talkback at issuesetc.org.
Welcome
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about a BBC story about smartphones, social media, and Christianity. Pastor Hans Feeney is our guest on this Monday, February the 27th. Hans, I remember when Twitter was just establishing itself as a social media platform, and it happened so quickly, it seemed like just after Twitter became a household name, there were already mostly kind of evangelical pastors out there who had decided that they wanted to use it in the course of the worship service somehow. And the way that they landed upon was, look, I have my smartphone here. While I'm preaching, people can just tweet me things, questions and ideas and thoughts, and I'll try to incorporate that into my message. Just a kind of a flailing use of the technology, if you ask me. I know what that does for the popularity of a social platform like Twitter. What does it do for preaching?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fine concept for perhaps a Bible study that's kind of structured in that way, or for, you know, if you're doing some kind of online course or something like that. I think with regard to preaching, however, that's just sort of a recipe for disaster. Because you know the goal of preaching is much more honed and confined to kind of a specific theme and context for that specific moment, than just kind of shooting off the cuff type of stuff. And so I think in a situation like that, you go, well, yeah, the reality is if you're, in particular if you're coming from a tradition like ours in the Lutheran Church where preaching is taking place within the context of the natural divine worship service, I don't think that's terribly helpful, because it just it doesn't give you really that much of a chance to organize your thoughts, to keep things kind of tightly honed in, and to really have kind of put a good amount of prayer and meditation into what it is that you are proclaiming to people, as opposed. So that's what I mean. Preaching should be proclaiming, and not just kind of theologizing off the cuff. So I think that's certainly, it may be a fun kind of novelty for people, but it's certainly something to avoid, I think, at least in terms of corporate worship. And the reality is, we used to have a solution to that problem of people having questions and wanting to know the answer to things that were happening in sermons, which was that you would call your pastor and talk to him about it. And I think that this kind of using social technology in a way that actually diminishes the intimacy of the connection between the shepherd and the sheep is certainly not a good thing.
I mean, the first thought or first word that occurred to me when I saw this happening, I think we even talked about it on the air, was gimmick. You know, Twitter's out there and it's people have their smartphones in church, but it seemed to me just gimmicky to try and incorporate it into a sermon. Pointless in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think that's certainly a fair take on it. We have a tendency of dealing with these problems in church. It's sort of like that old line from Jurassic Park. You were so preoccupied with whether or not you could that you didn't stop to think whether or not you should. And I think oftentimes we see this in church with really all kind of a whole host of issues. It's not just related to things that are technological, but where people just go, "Oh, hey, here's the thing I can do now," and then they just do it. And then there's not much reflection on it beforehand, and so once they've embraced it, you kind of put yourself in a position where you become quite defensive if anyone says, "Yeah, I don't know if this is a good idea," and you get defensive in a way that you probably wouldn't have if you'd really kind of sat down and sort of discussed it with your brother pastors and brother Christians before embracing the practice.
Has the church, in some ways, already crossed that line? When it comes to, and we're talking about screens here now, and there's something, someday someone will explain, there'll be a name for it, about the way that the screen captures and holds our attention, and it ultimately serves as kind of the biggest distraction in our lives nowadays. But has the church crossed that line by putting big screens in the worship service already?
Yeah, I think it certainly warms people up to the idea. It takes a hymnal out of your hand. It stops you from, maybe holding a hymnal with your brother or sister or your mother or father who's sitting next to you, which I think is a really important part of just kind of developing the piety of fellowship within the church. And I don't know, I'm sure there's probably some science behind this just as far as how your brain is responding to light. But I certainly noticed this, in my own life, just when I read, I don't know how people, have these Kindles that are the kind that aren't like the paper white, whatever they call them, but just the kind of regular screen. I don't know how people can read on those, because I read stuff online in a similar way in a screen, but I never find a sense of calm and peace in the same way that I do with just having paper in front of me, and something where I'm not, where there's not this sort of glowing light emanating towards my face. I there's a different dynamic there that I don't understand the issue well enough to know where that difference is, but I think there's certainly something to that, that it's something in that range. You're working your way into entertainment, at least kind of how our brains respond to it, rather than learning.
Or referencing this BBC piece on technology in church, one of the things that is noted there is that when the Bible is read off of a screen, people tend to read for information rather than kind of getting into the text itself. The way it's put there is, when you read the Bible on a screen, you end up reading the text as though it was Wikipedia.
Yeah, that was an interesting comment that the article made. I'd be interested in kind of learning a bit more about that. I thought there was sort of a silly point that it made later on, where it basically said, well, this is bad because it could lend people to believe that things like the Book of Genesis are literal history. So no, we don't want that happening. My goodness, that would be terrible. So I found that to be a little silly, but there probably is something, just probably something kind of psychological about that, where when you typically the types of things that people read on screens are, this is Wikipedia, this is an article from NewYorkTimes.com, where they're reading emails, and unless you're a really good email writer, which most people aren't, most people don't take the time to even try, you're not writing poetry, you're not reading poetry in your emails, you're not reading really deftly crafted prose, it's just pure information that you're trying to get. And I think this is kind of similar for me in how a lot of times when I'm driving, I like to listen to the Bible on tape. Well, I'm showing my age by calling it that, but you get the idea. Audio Bible through my phone, but I have a harder time. I don't really like to listen to the Psalms that much through it. The epistles can work pretty well. The historical books work pretty well for that. But it's hard for me to get really as much out of the Psalms, simply because I'm not staring at the words on a kind of crisp sheet of paper, where I'm able to just sort of, pour over them and keep my eyes on them without getting a headache from a screen sort of blaring at me, and this type of thing. So there probably is something to that.
I think that I don't think I've been to a worship service where, either in the bulletin or in some sort of pre-worship announcement, people were told to turn off their phones. Most people nowadays, at least in the part of the world where I live, show up on Sunday morning and either mute the thing, turn it off, or don't bring it in at all, one thing or the other. But that's not true of other venues that we visit. My wife does theater. There is a very clear announcement to turn off your phone, and inevitably there's some old lady talking to her daughter in the middle of Act 3 in a full voice. As church becomes more like those other venues, will we have to say, folks, turn off your phone? Come on, this is the house of God.
Oh yeah, I think we can expect in the coming years to really have to do a lot of work at reteaching people how to view the church as a sacred space, either because they just haven't gone at all, or simply because the churches they have gone to haven't really done much to proclaim that and to make that clear. So I think that's certainly something we're going to see in the future, which is people they're not really going to know how to distinguish between sacred and secular places, between holy and just average run of the mill type of places. And there's certainly going to need to be an effort on the part of the church to say, no, we dress differently, we behave differently, we speak differently, we compose ourselves differently in the house of God than we do in other scenarios. And so, yeah, I think that's certainly going to be an issue in the years to come.
Are we, I think we are in some ways already there, but are we facing a future in the church where we're going to be forced to deal with this? In other words, the pastor, instead of having a paper manuscript in front of him, is going to have a tablet. The people, instead of having a hymnal or a Bible in front of them, are just going to be using their smartphone.
Yeah, perhaps. That certainly seems to be the direction that things are going. I don't think it's a good one, but at the same time, we'll see how these things sort of pan out. And as these things tend to go, certainly, yeah, the church does adapt in some of these ways. But at the same time, I do also think that, you know, there is this desire in Christians to actually actively be a part of what's being proclaimed. I think hopefully there will come a point where people just sort of say, you know, there's enough is enough with this stuff, and you just sort of get overwhelmed and detached from what's going on around you. The more that you're drawn into this social media stuff and screen time, and so hopefully Christians can discover that there's something worth fighting for in maintaining an atmosphere in worship where you could kind of, you know, walk out of a time machine and, you know, go back a couple hundred years and still be receiving the Word of God in primarily the same kind of environment.
Pastor Hans Feeney is pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois. He's creator of a series of comical videos called Lutheran Satire, and he's senior contributor to The Federalist. You'll find a link to his columns and to Lutheran Satire under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Hans, thanks.
Thanks for having me.
Folks, the Lutheran Young Adult Corps will be starting this summer. Lutheran Young Adult Corps provides long-term service opportunities in communities of need for young adults between the ages of 18 and 26. Young adults will be assigned with LCMS congregations, campus ministries, or recognized service organizations in Boston, New Orleans, and St. Louis. You can find out more at lcms.org/young-adults-corps. That's C-O-R-P-S. That's lcms.org/young-adult-corps. Lutheran Young Adult Corps. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll be looking forward to the first Sunday in Lent, talking with Dr. Carl Fekencher of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, about the temptation of Jesus. It happens right before his public ministry. He is tempted for 40 days by the devil himself and resists with the Word of God. We'll also talk with Pastor Tom Baker. He'll lead us in a Sunday school lesson on Jesus and Zacchaeus. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow on Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
I'm talking with regular guest Dr. Ken Sherb about a new book by one of his former professors. Which one, Ken?
The late Dr. Kurt Marquardt, and the book is The Saving Truth, Doctrine for Lay People.
You edited this book.
Yeah, the unpublished manuscript was among Marquardt's papers, and it is vintage Marquardt, lively, engaging, centering in the Christ who saves, with an apologetics chapter at the end.
You can find out more about Saving Truth, Doctrine for Lay People at lutheracademy.com.
Repentance and forgiveness, sin and grace, law and gospel, more than cliches, real preaching for real people in need of hearing the real Christ. Christ for You and the Divine Service at St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, Illinois, where we gather every Saturday night at 6 and on the Lord's Day, Sunday mornings at 7:45 and 10. Look for the Church of the Neon Cross on I-55 between exits 30 and 33. Find us on the web, stpaullutheranchurchhamel.org. St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, where there is the forgiveness of sins, life and salvation for the people of God.
We're joined now by listener Rocky. Rocky, tell us about the tax benefits of donating stocks to issues, etc.
What we discovered in talking with our tax people and our stock advisors is that it would be beneficial for us to be giving our charitable donations by this means, by giving stocks, which meant that we could give a stock and essentially say if you gave a $100 stock, it's straight money to whatever charitable organization you want to give. As opposed to cashing it out, we'd only be able to give whatever portion is left over after the tax consequences.
How would you advise our listeners if they're interested in donating stocks, bonds, or mutual funds?
They need to go and talk to their stockbroker or their tax person, and I think they'll find out it makes a heck of a lot of economic sense. And you're much better steward with your money, because what you're ending up doing is stretching the dollars that you're able to give donation-wise, and you're able to give a whole lot more directly to those people that you want to support, and you're able to preserve much more for yourself using the laws that have been provided for it.
Rocky, is there anything that we left out that you want to tell our listeners?
Well, the only thing that you've missed is that people really need to support Issues, etc. This is a terrific way to do it in a very economical way. It's a way to do it and be good stewards of the resources that God has blessed people with. And I would encourage everyone to support Issues, etc. in every possible way that they can. And if this is available to them, I'd encourage them to look into it, because it not only will help them, but it'll help Issues, etc. also.
To find out how to reduce your tax burden and support this worldwide outreach by donating stocks, bonds, or mutual funds, talk to your stockbroker or tax advisor, and then call Craig here at Lutheran Public Radio, 618-223-8385.